just, yeah, busy.
Very busy, though.
So I don't think we're expecting anybody else, so we'll go ahead and get started. Was there something you guys wanted to change up again?
Yeah, we do have a new copy of the rule, a new version that I printed.
A new version that's different than the one that's posted?
Well, just there's a couple slight things that are slightly different. Hang on here.
Do you need to go, do you want to put that up first?
I would love to put that up first. I've got billable hours, Tina.
Well, I've got a ton to do.
All right. No, yeah.
The rest of us.
The rest of us
have nothing left to do today.
She has been living down here. I thought you'd get a cot or something.
All right, so then what we'll do, we'll just go around real quick and introduce everybody that's here. I'm Chris Bittner. I'm with Water Quality.
Leland Myers, Sewer.
Reed Obendorfer, Central Utah Water.
Bill Damery, Water Quality.
Laura Lockhart for Bill Damery with the Attorney General's Office.
Jeff Osmiller, Water Quality.
Leanne Lamb, Water Quality.
And on the phone we have
Tina Laidlaw, EPA.
Okay, and can you hear okay, Tina?
I can hear great.
Great. So the only other thing, can we move our meetings from here out to the third Mondays at 1? Does that work? It worked better for some other work group members who do regularly attend, and I'd like to accommodate that if we can. So that means our next meeting then would be scheduled for March 18th, 2013 at 1 o'clock. Ben Holcomb just came in.
Good Tina. Good morning.
Great. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Tina.
Is that when you held staff meetings, the afternoon on Mondays?
We held them whenever we wanted.
Yeah, it's true. You're small enough.
Okay.
No regularity.
All right, Bill, then let her rip.
Okay.
401 certification.
Well, thank you. First I'll start with an apology. I'm sorry that we kind of sent this out late to you, but we're hoping that you had time to take a look at it. Based on our last meeting in June, we took your comments on the 401 certification proposed rule, and we tried to address all those. Let me just go over those kind of quickly. Some concerns about how we were addressing the Corps' nationwide permits in terms of meeting when the nationwide permits weren't being issued, if there was a de minimis threshold. We tried to address that. There was a sense that in some aspects we were going too broad with the rule. We were starting to go into areas dealing with quantity, and so we've tried to eliminate those areas to address that concern. We tried to clarify that this is an iterative process in sections 4.2 and 4.4, that we outline what's in the application procedures, what is being required may not come all at one time. So, you know, we tried to outline and address that. And then we did some further clarification of public hearings to address concerns that were put in there. And then we added two new sections in the back, Section 7 and Section 8, which is quickly just dealing with enforcement and the transfer of the certification, transfer of the ownership of the property. What we'd like to get today from the work group is permission to proceed to the Water Quality Board to make rulemaking. And of course, we'll address any concerns that you may have between now and then, but we're looking to try and get to the board to do that in January or February. So that's what we'd like to do, to see if we can get from the group today.
And we're not doing this as a standard. It'll be a separate.
It is a separate rule. Maybe that's where we could start off with. The 401 certification is being separated out from the standards state rules, and we're making it a separate rule, R317-15. And that's what we have in front of us today. So to proceed, then, to clarify, well, maybe to back up a little bit, what the rule's intention is for is any time a federal permit or license is being issued, the state has to certify or ensure that it will meet the state water quality standards. And we've been implementing this program for the last almost 40 years since its inception in the Clean Water Act, or slightly before. So, but we've been doing it without rules, and the reason that we're moving forward with rules, there's several, but the main ones are is that it'll give us a direct contact with the applicant, and where now we're kind of doing everything with the applicant through the core. We're not having direct contact. That's kind of the major reason that we're moving forward with the rules. Plus then the complexity of the projects and what else? Because my boss told me I had to do it. That's what he's going to write here.
Sorry, go ahead.
You can go ahead. You're the...
No, my question was, when we put in a separate rule, we got a separate application process. Are we going to, is it the same application that they can submit to the Corps, or do we need a different application? Are these the same criteria that's listed in the Corps' application?
It's separate criteria, because the Corps doesn't deal with water quality. And that's why we're always trying to play catch-up. Right now, in the past, the state most times doesn't learn about the application or the project until it goes to public notice. So then we're trying to play catch-up with the Corps and the applicant in terms of having them meet the state water quality standards. And so in talking with the Corps, they initially were uncomfortable of putting together a joint application at this time. What they'd like to do is to try and get this going over the next 3 to 4 years, and then they will entertain bringing the two applications together. But they like to get us out on our own to begin with, and then come together.
So the only way to start is with FERC or the Corps?
Yeah.
Because they won't know otherwise, right?
Right.
Okay.
So in the rule, the way it's drafted now is what we're requesting is the time they make application with FERC or with the Corps, they make it at the same time they make application for 401 certification. So we're all starting off at the same time. And I'm trying to catch up.
So essentially, though, you're going to have an application for stream alteration to the Corps, to water quality, and to the water stream alteration permit section.
No, I don't think the way that we're dealing with that regional general permit 40 or the stream alt permit is going to change. We kind of blanket cert the stream alt permits with conditions. So right now, stream alt permits don't require an individual certification per one. We have conditions based on there are blanket conditions, like we have one, a condition for 3A streams, cold water streams, where if they take out mature trees, that we call it the canopy clause, they have to replace those trees. So we have certain conditions that are set up for those. And we're really trying not to make anything broader or change anything other than the fact we're developing an application process for individual permits.
So if I were Union Pacific, going to put a new crossing of Great Salt Lake, I'd have to fill this out.
If there was a federal permit or a license being issued.
Well, there'll be a, they have to do, I think, 404. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
But the Corps made a determination it's under Nationwide now?
Well, it'll be a 404 that it will be under a nationwide 404, and there again, that it's a blanket cert that we elected every 5 years to review the individual nationwide permits, and the state then has to determine if they want to call out and not blanket cert it and call for an individual permit.
So, but will they have to do an application for nationwide permit?
No, for nationwide permit 17, the one where they're covering the transportation, they would not at this time. Not for at least the next 5 years. Because we blanket certed those here recently.
Would that be the same like sewer line installations?
That's correct.
Nationwide and GP.
Regional general permit.
And also the letter of permission.
Letter of permission, it's a new one that the Corps hasn't enacted yet here in the state. That you would have to require, we would require an individual permit. That's kind of one step up from both a nationwide permit and a regional general permit, but it's a 404 permit that the Corps looks at, but it's an expedited process. So they're thinking it will have somewhere in between an individual permit and a regional general permit as far as impacts.
It's also important to understand that this is not a new requirement. This is a requirement established under Section 401. And all we're doing is kind of putting the bones or the meat on the bones that's in Section 401.
And that was going to be my question. I'm sorry, I just thought of it today and I didn't go look it up. But don't we have language in our standards that we have a joint application for 401? You know, I think we have to go back and look because, no?
We have, in our standards language, we have, under the ADR section, we have, in terms of public notice, where the core public notices are 401. And we also say, in terms of, in reference to our ADR, that we can't, in terms of the Corps 404, we can't ask the applicant to give us a separate alternatives analysis. That if the Corps is requiring it, then we can't ask for it one separately. And so that's something we'll need to address kind of, I think, almost at the same time here.
Yeah, because Chris is opening up the standards, and even though we want this out of standards so that we might have a fix there, I think. You know?
Right. Well, there we have to have, we have to do work, Nick and I, in terms of looking at how the 401 is going to be working with the ADR better than it has been in years past.
Well, do we want to take a look at that language right now? There's only two clauses.
Yeah.
At some point today, it would be nice if we could remove this rule if it's going to conflict with standards in some way, which probably is trying to figure out
think
how
it will
address
it.
Look. We can do that later, though, Bill, if you want to.
Yeah, we can. There's nothing too much, I don't think, in there that really, it may not be appropriate to have it in there, but I don't think we really would change. I mean, we're still supporting that the Corps would do our public notice for us in terms of the same time. I just think it's a good way to bring it, and I really foresee in the next 3 or 4 years, if we can successfully pass this rule, that we will have a joint application. Right now, it's just they request that it be separate.
So we got it here just where it's subjected, right? And then where's...
It's later, it's towards the end. Yeah, there we go.
Which is what you're doing now.
Most, I think it's with the ADR. This is under the ADR portion.
Yeah, I'm not seeing what would we need to change there.
I don't know. I wish we got it now. Since we're talking about adding this rule, just make sure we have it.
Yeah.
There is a part in there where we can't request a separate alternatives analysis, which I'm not seeing.
Yeah, that's
it's somewhere where we may want to look for. I think it's in the towards the end.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Lease agreeing options, UTDS.
There it is. It's R37-2-3.
Special procedures.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All appropriate alternatives are good.
Yeah, the, in C it has that 404B1 finding document is produced and is the basis for the permit. Will not require development of separate alternatives analysis for the anti-degradation review.
See, and the part that I would bring out for discussion with that is that in the CORE's alternatives analysis, they're looking to, they're not necessarily looking at a water quality component to it. You know what I mean? And that's where we may want to revise this, because the alternatives analysis may not be meeting.
Right, they're two different. There's sometimes the line, but sometimes the CORE's has different objectives.
Right.
And so, expressly not allowing ourselves to do that.
It sounds like this needs more thought before there's any proposal.
Yeah.
So is there a requirement in the Clean Water Act that we have this in anti-degradation?
No.
It was the only 401 language and 404 language we've had. And
well, that's, and so one thing that I'm thinking is we should take it out of here and put it where it belongs.
Right.
Right.
And it really could really be a matter of that we could just change, say that we, well, the division will use the 404, we can pass this in there. The executive secretary will not require development of a separate alternative analysis. But it would, you know,
and then the guidelines that we develop for the 401 would include.
So, Chris, did you just ask a question? Is so does the ADR have to be part of our standards?
No, the ADR does, but I'm asking if 404 and 401 is required to be in ADR.
Oh, okay.
Is it
it's just where it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if EPA is not requiring it to be there, we did it there as an option, then it would seem to make sense to me to pull all the 404, 401 stuff out of the ADR and put it into 13, whatever we want to keep.
Right.
So, Chris, I can follow up with Dave and Lorena on that too, because I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I didn't. Know, yeah, and I made a note to myself to follow up with Dave on that.
Well, I get the logic of putting it there because your 401 certification is a water quality standard certification. You know that you're not.
But it's in
that.
ADR.
Right, but
right,
so.
But it's still in the.
But there's very little in either rule. More regulations about anti-degradation period.
Right.
And as you recall, I used to comment on the fact that I could fit it all on one slide. So I'm pretty sure I could double check that. I'm almost certain that there's no specific requirement. But this sounds like something we are going to address today. Maybe we should. I don't think it doesn't preclude us moving forward with the 401 rules, but it does mean that we should look at this.
Yeah, the way I'm seeing it, maybe it's incorrect, but the way I'm seeing it is that you have the ADR, which is part of our standards, and in the ADR, you're precluding the ADR to look at an alternatives analysis, and even the CORE has done it. And the basis of a lot of sometimes the 401 or an EA is that ADR. So I think it's a separate thing in the sense that do we want to be limiting our ADR analysis when we're dealing with the CORE's 404
right.
to just their alternatives analysis?
Right. Separately, they're going to select a preferred alternative, and then we're going to be acting on what their preferred
right.
alternative is in the context of the 401 certification.
Right.
So, that I mean, it's completely logical in that context to me. That's something we should probably think about.
So, really, the top paragraph and paragraph 3 there, the sentence, really isn't true. Before permitted activities, all appropriate alternatives to avoid and minimize degradation should be evaluated.
Well, that's 404 language.
That's 404, but it's the way they're saying it is to avoid and minimize degradation. They're looking at it in terms of putting in fill.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is not necessary the degradation, minimize degradation to water quality.
Yeah, but I'm saying this isn't a water quality section. One would read that and mean it's associated with water
right.
quality.
Right. I agree. It's misleading.
Yeah. And so we're not actually looking at that. And particularly if you got a nationwide permit, you're not doing that at all.
Well, we do it once every 5 years as we're evaluating a nationwide permit on a hypothetical basis. Yes.
But so I see two issues. One, does it belong in here, in the ADR? And then the other issue is, do we want to just rely on the Corps? And those are kind of separate.
Well, I think they're actually related. I don't know that you want to move over rules that you don't
want to change. Oh, no.
You're talking about changing them.
Right, but you can move them should we move them out of here, mm-hmm. out of anti-degradation, and into the 404, 401 circles? And then what do we move is the other question. So, all right, you'll look at this. So I guess when do you need to hear back from work group members?
Probably by the end of December, I think. Because the board meeting is January 23rd, so they usually go 2 to 3 weeks out.
Are you planning on doing standards rule revision for January?
It depends on the biological discussion.
It may be February.
So my question is probably a little bit more. To me, there's nothing, even though we might want to look at this language, whether it should be here or whatever, I mean, there's nothing here that would change how this would be implemented, right? It's just, right. As Leland pointed out, there's some stuff here that might be misleading, whether or not it's appropriate to be here. Whether or not we really want to eliminate the possibility that we might want to have additional alternatives evaluated that are specifically related to water quality. You know, that's a substantive piece. But as I said, right now what we're doing the 401 certification on is they give us what their alternative that they've selected is. So we aren't involved in that selection process. So this, at least in that sense, this describes how we currently operate. Right?
Right.
Don't you have to keep both going until you get this one done? If you do this one first, then can't you reference this one in?
Yes, right. We can. Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is we can still compare color with this, you know, with this document if we wanted to, and take some time to figure out what after that's done, what we should change here.
Okay, but the implication of the 401 certification would cover all of what's in the ADR, wouldn't it? So. I don't know if you have to exactly put that out so you don't have, because you have a fairly extensive application section in this one that should cover all that, right?
But we don't ask for the alternatives analysis because the ADR portion of this was, they have to address the alternatives analysis in the ADR, which is part of meeting the water quality standards, which they have to do in order to...
And here we're saying that if they do the alternatives analysis for the Corps, we'll do that in an ADR context. And I think that's fine for now. I mean, it's less... no one's having to do something they aren't already having to do.
Yeah, but how often does that happen? If I'm applying for dredge and fill, I'm going to put junk here. I don't think there's an alternative. Well, we can decide.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like a FERC guy is going to say, I'm going to put an inline generator. Deal with it. I'm just saying.
Have you seen an alternatives analysis like with the causeway, right? There was.
Right. I mean, they have to go through, like in the EA process, they'll have to go through a no action alternative, and then they'll have to support it. You know.
Unless they do the emergency, and then they don't have to be
sure. Right.
I have one more question. Do we need to clarify in the application that we're really only looking for applications from individual permits? Do we need language in there that we have already certified
you know, nationwide. So
there is language in there now that's dealing with nationwide. So that's in section 5.3. We didn't talk about regional.
So, Bill, you'll give me a copy of the latest, greatest to post to work off of?
Yes. You know, when you read this language on the 5.3, it almost leads you to believe that you still have to do the application.
Okay, I can clarify that.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. I can't find it. So, it's 5.3.3 or?
It's under section 5.
15-5-5.
Starts every 5 years.
15-5.
And then 5.3. On the last page.
What? Public notice.
Yeah, but it didn't talk about the application.
See, the part was, I think they have some authority, nationwide permits are better. And every 5 years, we go through those 30 or so nationwide permits and determine if we're going to call out for an individual permit. Like, we were thinking about doing that with the small generators of power of FERC, because that seems to be becoming more prevalent these days as the price of oil and everything goes up. Anyway, we were thinking about that, and we put special conditions on those. So we'll just have to make sure when in language that we revise kind of addresses that. So, you know, every 5 years it changes. We'd have to go in and change the rule. That's all I'm saying, is if we don't think we put the incorrect language in.
Well, I think it should be under applicability instead of public hearing.
Okay.
Or maybe both. I mean, because people will read this to try to understand if they need to apply, or if they're covered under nationwide comment.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any comments back from anybody else on this? It's not here.
Except the primary purpose of the 30-day public.
I know I got the EPA comments.
No, FERC is going to give me their, or not FERC, but the Corps is giving me their comments 5 weeks in. But I talked with Jason this morning, I don't think they're going to be significant.
Any comments from Eric?
No.
You know,
well, you've received a comment from Merritt.
Oh, from Merritt. I thought you said from Air. From Merritt. Merritt did give me comments about the public hearing. That was why we had to beef up the public hearing portion.
I don't see myself being smart enough to make another comment on it. So, and I don't know if anybody else here is going to come down and want to comment on it, but I see no reason to, from this group's standpoint, to say, okay, go get what you can and get going on it. Unless somebody else does.
I sort of agree with that. It's like you guys have to work out your web between the two different rules.
Yeah, right.
And there'll still be plenty of offer. I mean, we'll have to take this to the board, and there'll be a public comment period.
That's when you might get something, because we don't have it to be on this committee who's really a 404 kind of user. So that's when you're going to get your comments.
Sure.
When they all bring their 1,000, the ones who do it a lot bring their attorneys in and want to worry about it.
Well, Lisa is involved in that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, because she's in the middle of trying to
get it. But she's not coming all the time here, and she hasn't submitted anything, so.
She did submit comments to us here, and we tried, early on, we tried to make sure they were addressed. Here's the comment of de minimis, something that falls beneath the nationwide permit. So I got to talk to Laura a little bit about that.
Well, when you go to the ADR section, the truth is, the ADR section is a little consequence unless somebody wants to use it to complain. That's exactly what it'll be used for. You'll do whatever you want to do, and as long as no one cares,
you just do what you want to do. But somebody's going to say at some point, you didn't follow your ADR because it says it should know and value all the alternatives, and you didn't look at all the alternatives for water quality protection. So that's where you're going to have a problem. It's going to be Rob DeBute or Earl Walker or someone like that coming back with a procedural complaint about your giving a 401 certification because you didn't do ADR.
Well, see, that instead of, I don't know, once it's in rule, it's hard to get it out, but I was thinking the whole ADR stuff, that should be in the guidance that we create for the 401.
Well, it is in here, too, in terms of the fact that they have to apply right. for it. Yeah.
Under well, that's where 11. If once you get this rule in place, then you do like Chris suggested, and
fix
the ADR saying, we'll refer it to this rule now.
Get it out of there.
And you'll be lucky if somebody doesn't complain and say, I like that because they want to be able to use the one I did.
And I think we captured Leland saying, I'm not smart enough.
We're going to get that sound bite. And we'll
just keep playing.
That's a mournable.
Video of some
sort. I'm not smart.
I'm not smart.
That's a very rare occasion.
I often think of it as he has a meeting of 10.
I'm just a sewer worker.
I'm going to do a chain of custody on his recorder. I think that's a good idea that we have taken it as far as we can take it here.
Okay.
And
I mean, if you add in something to the effect on the application not being necessary on nationwide. Or it says, you follow the nationwide procedure, you're not going to review it individually. Something to that effect.
So okay.
They're not being held to the application process if you're following it nationwide. Unless you want them to.
You want 10,000 permanent applications on your desk? He's thinking of self-sustaining. If he gets that fee to sustain his job.
You get it every kind of sewer line gets put in across the screen.
Yeah.
Or modified across the screen.
Okay. Well, thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Appreciate you making me sit for the rest of it.
Painfully, right?
Thank you.
Thank
you, Tina, for doing that for me. I appreciate it.
These are realizing I don't know about what you guys do. Oh, it frustrates.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. It's like, oh, that's in the new rule.
All right, so we're back on the agenda, and that is for the biocriteria language.
Okay, so the language that I have here currently is the latest round of tweaks. There are a number of things that are being proposed, and I think, Tina, have you had a chance to review this current language? Okay. So I guess I just want to, at this point, just review what's being proposed, and if we're all fine with it, then we can, then I can set these in space, and then I want to take it back to our work group, have them give it a last glance, and then we could proceed to take it to the board next month, right? If that sounds okay with everybody. I don't hear any objections. So do we want to look through these?
I'm not sure why you want to go back to your
work. Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering.
The work group was just to bring something forward to this committee. Once we've got it, I don't think we're going back and saying, okay, now do you agree with it?
I'm worried about us getting caught in a do loop in regards to that.
Yeah,
even
but
it would be most transparent to do that, I guess. I mean, they worked hard on developing the language, and it is a little different, but the intent, I mean, they should have realized from the beginning that, they were going to put together their ideas and the changes might be modified to that as we move forward. And individually, they'll have a crack at it if we move forward with the language, too.
Okay. I'm fine with that, too. I'll just give them the heads up that they can still comment on it when it goes to the board or during the process after that as well.
Yeah. No, I think you should give them another crack at it. I really do. Because here they presented us language, they liked the way it was, and we've changed it. And we should see if there's some big flags. It doesn't mean, it's like anybody else, it doesn't mean we have to delay it or we have to do anything. But what is the harm in asking them? And it's really, I think...
No, I think that's
well, this clearly has gone through multiple iterations outside of the working group. I mean, we're back to a different version, but we've gone through multiple iterations outside the working group already.
Mm-hmm. So here maybe there's some middle ground, and I agree that we can set a meeting with the work group to say, this is what language came out of the water quality standards work group, and this is why. This is what we're moving forward with, and you know, this is why. And if you guys have additional formal comments you'd like to make in the standards rulemaking process, please do so.
Could do that. And I think the way we should do it in the future is just make sure that they're invited to this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Because
who has been primary commenters on the work at the work group?
There's no primary. It's just been little nuggets here and there from different folks.
I mean, I don't see a problem going back except this one more meeting I have to attend.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
Well, I wasn't thinking he's going to set a meeting.
I think it's fine. I can capture that. I can capture that.
That's how I was.
And, honestly, in the last few iterations, there's been very little. I mean, most folks are just saying it's okay, but I just want to give them that opportunity to give another look before we send it to the board.
But I think in the future, we should just have our sub-work groups, once they've gotten it out of there, then we come to here. Right. Then if they want to come here, that's when they need,
right,
if they
well,
want
to. Well, initially we did that, but there's been three more of these since then, because there has been just these little nuances here and there to, you know, change a few words. But
okay,
if you do that a few times, then you wonder how far have we drifted. And honestly, I don't know when was the last draft, which draft was the last one they actually seen. I mean, I'm on 15 now. May have been draft 8. So I don't know.
Well, that's enough.
But yeah, I'll just... So how about we just say that, you know, we're fine here with, you know, after we review this, if we're at a point where we feel we're comfortable taking it to the board, we can at least recommend the action, we take it to the board, and then I'll, between now and when we meet with the board, I'll send an email out reviewing what's taken place and how they can still participate if they so choose. So do we want to go through these each specifically, or is everyone fine with the way things are? I'm just assuming people have read this.
And Ben, just so I'm clear, you're looking at version 15, is that correct?
Excuse me?
Version 15.
Yes.
Version 15.
Yes.
Okay, great. That's the version I have. I just wanted to confirm.
Okay, see
the version. Yeah, I see a version on my printed copy. I might be using an outdated copy.
This is the copy, I'm sure of it.
Let me type version 15 in here.
No.
No, it's not.
I don't know. Yeah, common denominator.
This is the one that I emailed Chris. So.
So is that a no objections to moving forward, or is that one?
I had a couple of comments that didn't show up in here. They're not major ones, and it's mentioned a couple of times, but the first time is in 7.3. Waters of the state shall be free from human-induced stressors in concentrations or combinations. In a comment I sent back to Leland, I had physical conditions as well, so it's not just a concentration of one or more stressors. It could be a human-induced physical habitat issue that we've always, you know, been talking about for the last many months. And then it said, or combinations thereof, so combination of it, stressor in concentrations or physical conditions. So I thought that was worthwhile to add that. It just isn't exclusively to the concentrations of a pollutant or a pollution.
Because I thought there we were just trying to carve out what we were trying to regulate. And we're not trying to regulate the physical pressure.
Okay. Except that this is an assessment, though.
Yeah, it's an assessment of the biological stuff. And I thought Howie was going to address that by making this pretty broad. Any human-caused stressor. Yeah.
Which would be physical. Stressor,
which would, you know, intrinsically include habitat.
That was my intention.
And one of the combinations, one of the comments we had was that, well, if you include habitat, what about all the other stuff? And then we said, well, if we're general, then we capture everything.
Right, but in 7.3, the first paragraph, this is the statement of what this is the crux statement, because this is what it shall be, and so that's where we probably wouldn't want to put physical habitat in there, because some of those things we don't have control over. So when you say it should be filled from a habitat problem, it shall be free from that. That assumes that you can control habitat issues. It is an assessment, but it's not that. Sorry, Tina, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Leland. I thought you were finished. I was going to say, to me, I thought that was addressed. Your concerns with habitat degradation were already addressed in 7.3d,
right,
where it says, if there is a biologically degraded water body, then that's when you look at specific pollutants, including looking at non-chemical stressors like habitat.
Right.
Right. And that to me is that we're saying that, yeah, right. So we're saying, because it's very possible, and actually this will happen, that we'll find a biological degradation, right? But, and it is biologically degraded, but that it might be due to habitat or some form of irreversible condition, in which case we have to say, well, okay, well, what's a more reasonable goal then? I mean, it's not that it's not biologically degraded, it's just that a non-biologically degraded condition is not an achievable an achievable goal, maybe, in some cases, right?
I mean, right. I mean, the idea, the obvious condition would be where a stream has been channelized, mm-hmm. and even more so where the stream has been lined.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to turn that to its physical condition that allowed for the existing biological condition that was there.
Or downstream of a dam.
Right.
You know, I mean, short of doing some pretty extensive...
So, you know, my thought was that since 7.3 of the initial paragraph is introduction to the section, that would be inclusive, and then, of course, a description down at D is a little more descriptive of what the intent was. So, I mean, if you guys are fine, I'm fine. My sits in section D, whatever, but I just thought it would be a little more inclusive in the introductory paragraph to the section.
Chris, I'm sorry, I kind of am missing what Darren's saying. Is he suggesting using some language on habitat degradation in 7.3
paragraph? Well, the way I look at it is you know, that's an introductory paragraph to that whole section 7.3. So I would just include the word, you know, physical conditions as well as water quality concentration. So I just thought it would be more inclusive as an introductory paragraph to that section.
My only concern with that is that it said water shall be free from human induced.
Right.
The assumption is that you're free from human induced habitat problems, which may or may not be able to be done.
Right.
I mean, you have the combination of water rights and everything else, so that eliminate and change the stream flow conditions, which may change the habitat. So I'm comfortable seeing it down in D, whereas it's not in A, because that introductory statement is the regulatory language someone's going to use to say this water is not free, it's degraded, it's impaired because of biological conditions. And so I don't want habitat to be included in that degraded condition. Do you?
You don't want habitat to be included?
Well, I want habitat to be assessed, but it's a reason why biological integrity might not be maintained from its original condition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's assessed and it's included in the analysis,
But you're not going to be able to revert all systems back to the original biological, the habitat condition. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it makes total sense. My only confusion was, and I don't really want to stand on this, you know, it's just a matter of it's just to be aware that that's also one of the conditions that can degrade the biological integrity. That's the only reason I, in an introductory statement, that's the reason I would have it. Not to be regulatory, just to say there's other stressors and water quality concentrations.
You can make that out easily by saying the water station will be free from human-induced stressors which degrade the beneficial uses and just eliminate in concentration or combination.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what that is.
Does that serve a purpose there, those two words?
Because other than that, you don't know what combinations is. There's combinations of pollutants or whatever, you know. So that's a little
just bit. Stressors in general.
Yeah.
But it's just human-induced stressors, strike out in combination, in concentration or combination, and then say, which will degrade the beneficial uses.
Yeah.
That way you don't have to worry about this combination of that.
Okay, run it by me again, Leland.
No, just strike out
in concentration or combination. Yeah. Combination.
Yeah, then you need a comma after stressors if you're going to follow it with a which.
Right. Very good.
Get it right.
I guess you're reading something.
Get it right, Mr. Kramer.
So that's...
You got to have that comma there, Jeff. Like
right after stressors.
Stressors, comma.
Right there.
Which
will degrade the beneficial uses.
Okay.
Here. As prescribed by the biological cellular process and biological criteria set forth.
So are you with us, Tina?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that makes sense. Okay. At least in general, yeah.
And then you go into the A, B, C, and D.
I like the comma. I'm glad Jeff's on that. Yeah.
That's why we bring them. Okay. Next one.
Oh, that's it. I'm
that's
good.
It.
No, I'm
good. Okay. Yeah. I thought you said yes.
No, because D, it does cover the more of the details. So.
Are we ready to move this one forward then? At least to the board, next vote?
I'm okay moving it forward to the board.
It is Monday.
All right, Tina, how about this? My hell, I'm okay moving it to the board.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I thought my ears would never hear that.
So that begs the question then, now that we're going to be opening up standards, Chris, you have a laundry list of just sort of from clean up editorial things.
Yeah.
We should probably compile a list of those that we know about and just send them off to this group. They're mostly going to be editorial stuff, but we should just take care of that while we're at it. Make sense to you?
Yep.
Does this count as a triennial review?
Yes. Be part of our triennial review.
Well, what we'll do is...
Triennial review.
What?
It's a continuous triennial review.
It is. We will, when we get to triennial review in 2014, we will have to go out for public notice and give people an opportunity to do the hearing and look at all that. But what we're going to do is package everything we've done in the last 3 years and send it to EPA.
Yeah. And then whatever the current changes are. So we're going to take it in bits. This makes more sense. That way people can be more focused on
and,
that.
And it takes time. To do a lot of
these.
So we'll check that box for EPA that we did the review. We'll change my master list of things that we're watching and tracking, but we'll just package it up for rulemaking every 3 years and say, here's what we did in the last 3 years.
And Chris, are you thinking of this in January or February?
January board meeting.
Okay, January, thanks.
So that would just go out. Yeah, that would be permission. Let's see, we could make it. I don't know if it'll go out. It'll go out sometime in February.
Okay.
In the bulletin.
Because the board meeting is late.
It's late. So yeah, we'll probably make the 15th of February at the earliest for board meeting. So great.
Cool. That one took a year.
What a minute.
finished yet.
No. So just the last thing we had was just to go over the EPA recreation criteria that they published. I'll just do a summary here. So we'll talk about what the new criteria recommendations actually are, how it compares to our criteria, some implications I see, and then discuss where we want to go with that. So the 2012 was simply an update of the 86 criteria. EPA put out a draft in 2011. They got a measly 9,000 comments. They're working under a court-ordered deadline, so maybe perhaps they didn't respond as in detail or get knocked off track. They really wanted to.
They got all 9,000.
Somebody did. You get a lot beyond, it's beyond the scope. Let's see, what was their other one? Oh, do a site-specific standard, and I'll talk about that a little bit. That was their canned response to a lot. Well, okay, go do a site-specific. But this is November 2012, so it was hot off the press. The new data they used in there since the 86 was these 9 coastal beaches that they did epidemiological study that were impacted by sewage. Aqua, who Walt is president, they were questioning the application to inland waters because these were all done on ocean beaches. And that was one of the concerns that Aqua had. So here's the new criteria. And one thing you'll notice new is you have a choice. You can set your criteria based on an estimated 36 per thousand illnesses or 32 per thousand. And that is a risk management decision. The criteria is a geometric mean, 30-day interval. So they crossed all their T's and dotted their I's for getting frequency, magnitude, and duration, which all criteria are supposed to have. So we have the geometric 30-day mean, and then a STV is a statistical threshold value, which is simply the 90th percentile, and that you wouldn't exceed that more than 10% of the time. Being a 90th percentile, that would be by definition. So you can see the numbers there, the numbers on the left for 36 per thousand, that's kind of where we're at now, and I'll show you that here in a minute. That's where our standard is right now.
But it's interesting that the inclusion of the STD, that's, you know, and basically actually saying in the recommendations, this is how we're recommending that you apply this in an assessment context, is not something that EPA has done. Previously. And I actually like that concept because it's at least getting some consistency. And it seems like the 90th percentile, you know, is a reasonable place to start there, I guess, you know, in an assessment context. So let's say that.
Yeah, and they're looking to protect for acute effects with that, and then also acute exposures, I should say. And then also to diluting out the samples with the mean, the geometric mean. So also provide long-term chronic protection at that geometric mean. They also added a beach advisory value, a BAV, which is beach action value. So, and that's set at the 71st percentile, and that would be for closures, they suggest, but it does not affect assessment decisions, so it's not criteria. And this is another good thing because it's been a lot of disagreement between EPA and the states about listing, for instance, advisories on things just to be protective when you really don't have data to say it's impaired, but you want to protect public health, so you do something overly conservative. So this gives you the option of doing beach action values at the 75th percentile and closing them, and that doesn't automatically roll over it as an impairment. We have that criteria or that decision point in our assessment methods that may be something we want to look at, that we say two beach closures, Jeff? I can't remember.
Yeah, we said that we're. I think that's right. Is that right? That's right.
Sure.
So I think it's, we said if it's, we didn't want to do it for a single incident, but if we have, it's either two or three. But if we have recurring incidents where we're closing beaches, that should be a trigger, a cause, a recreational impairment, so that we're having something to trigger the fix for a water body with repeated problems. What's the logic? I can't remember whether we fell on two or three occurrences of this.
Yeah, I can't.
I think it may have been three. I think it may be three.
But that's something we may want to look at. That's an assessment method. It's not a standard or criteria. But it seems like it's been covered now in the new criteria. So we may want to look at revising our assessment methods.
So you're ready to claim a beach area impaired? If you have two beach closures in
there? I think it's my memory is serving. I'm on lots of cold medication right now. So, but I think it was three or more.
There is a separate thing in there.
Okay. I'm just thinking about the Lake Powell thing, you know, where these things occur.
Not
much anymore, but this could be any beach in any water, but Lake Powell's one that has a standard, pretty well standardized monitoring.
Oh, yeah, they've whipped it.
Yeah, they really have.
And they provided facilities. And
yeah, they've so.
So, I guess the next step would be is, what would be the intent? Like, would you step up more monitoring, or ask the Park Service to do more monitoring there, or I'm just wondering how you would implement a TMDL or whatever, you know, or increased monitoring. Just to carry the next step, is it? I mean, how do you proceed?
Oftentimes, it would be more monitoring because these criteria apply to all of our 2A waters, right? Beach doesn't matter, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But for instance, we get samples submitted to us by Western Watersheds, whose goal is to eliminate grazing. We would want to probably follow up and retest because this 30-day geometric mean's wonderful, but we don't get 30-day. You know,
That's a lot of monitoring. That's a lot of expense.
And that's one of the things that Aqua was the objection was we don't. And we're going to end up spending listing waters that are generally lower priority for recreation, which is why we don't sample them that much, and we're going to have false positives. Diverting resources into chasing these things that really aren't important. EPA wasn't very sympathetic.
You got to love a rule and a implementation that you have no tool to fix.
You have what?
No tool to fix.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of.
You know, you're not. There are no point sources unless you're looking at stormwater. It's going to be over 126. Heck, I'm normally less.
Well, I think there's two examples that we have where. Like the dog parks and some BMPs that could be put in place to address that problem. Or we have a feedlot in southern Utah. Well, granted, it's an ongoing discussion, I guess, is the kind way to put it. To try to get the cattle fenced off, but there's a clear source, you know, and there's a way, and we're hoping we can fix it because it's right above Zions National Park, you know.
Well, my point is, you don't have tools to deal with the agricultural issues.
Right. So,
we have limited tools to deal with ag.
Yep, it's frustrating.
So also you don't delineate between human or animal sources of E. coli. Or
no, and that's
another.
EPA's answer to that is do a site-specific standard. So we're going to go out and do an epidemiological study and show that the cow E. coli isn't as infectious as human E. coli.
How about ducks?
Indicator.
Or ducks or
well, that's exactly.
And
so EPA's response to all that was, well, you can do a site-specific standard.
Well, there actually is some evidence, albeit, you know, that domestic animals tend to have the fecal contamination from them is more potential, you know, to cause, has a higher potential cause illness than non-domesticated animals. It's for the same reason we get really concerned with pigs get, or chickens get flu viruses, you know, I mean, there's that history of cohabitation that leads to susceptibility, you know.
Well, yeah, and now you're in a whole different thing where we're using a bacterial indicator for viruses, which is tenuous at best.
It's another stretch, yeah.
So here's a comparison of our existing criteria to EPA's new one. And you can see we fit in there quite nicely because we just revised ours in 2008. We were just looked at this real recent. So you can see our geometric means, good. We say a minimum of 5 samples. We have, EPA has this statistical threshold value, 90th percentile. We call it a max, but you can exceed it up to 10% of the time. So it really works out the same. The only difference is EPA says it could be 410 and we say 409.
Well, that's because we're more restricted than EPA.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
So legislature could come get us.
No, they've already done that. They did 25 over 30 on BOD.
So whether this warrants fixing or not is something I don't know.
But the EPA have two different arrays, right?
Well, that's the first thing we need to discuss, and I have that at the end. But okay. Yeah, if we're going to stay with the 36 versus the 31 or 32, whatever it was.
Remind me what the difference. What I remember the discussion on that we had here as to what was one or the other, and I don't remember it well enough to remember. How about that? We had a discussion talking about why there were the two different numbers.
With the STD and the, or the 36
the 32
and
the... 32 or the 36.
32 or 36.
It's the estimated illness rate.
Well, I know, but...
And EPA said, Dave, both of these are protective, you can pick.
Dave was talking about that one time, and there was a reason for the two different numbers. I can't remember what it was.
I should remember too, but I'm not.
It was
something to do with how the studies were actually conducted.
Oh yeah, it was in the data analysis. Yeah. I can. It's in there. I didn't.
I just can't remember. I was hoping you did.
And both numbers are correct. Just kind of.
They have. Yeah. There's. It's because they're. And then there. That's why we have two numbers. But I don't remember what that was.
So this is what EPA says this applies to. All waters include marine, estuary, and Great Lakes and inland waters that are designated for primary contact. So that's caused a bunch of comments. For instance, what about our infrequent weather? Response says that they're not changing the definition of primary contact and doesn't do anything for secondary. So my reading of that is our 2B stays the same. There are no recommendations for 2B. There are no recommendations. You got to get rid of 2B.
Well, except for R2B now reads infrequent. It reads infrequent primary contact and secondary contact recreation. So that even so, does that make it a? Is it? Because this statement here applies to all water with frequent contact, doesn't distinguish with the rate at which that occurs. So does that mean that essentially we would negate having an infrequent?
That's not my read. The comment responses are posted on our website but this was a big one with them, and they're still differentiating that. Not full body immersion, less exposure type. They still acknowledge that exists. So until EPA tells me we got to change it.
But don't we have it so that where ingestion is likely to occur for 2A?
It's an amount of exposure difference, is really what it comes down to. But we call them both primary. That's correct.
We'll wait to hear from EPA, but we might want to change. My only point was how we're describing infrequent contact recreation so that we make it clear that given the EPA statement, but maybe it's not an issue, I'm just bringing it up.
Well, but didn't we change that because EPA wanted us to?
Right. And that was based on another case where the 101 2A uses that require all waters of the nation to be protected for biology and recreation, basically. Right, and they said that if you don't include some exposure to, so that you have the potential for infrequent primary contact recreation, then you aren't meeting 101 2A uses. You aren't meeting the intent of the Clean Water Act. But with this language, maybe there's a different...
Have we ever sampled Farmington Bay?
Yeah, the Davis County Health Department does.
What's the numbers? Anybody want to know?
Not reliable.
Not reliable.
Yeah, because of the... Actually...
Really?
They're doing the enterococcus, and they got some really goofball numbers, and we went up and worked with their lab, so... I would have to check on it, but the numbers we got...
Well, that's others I asked. That's the type of a water that's going to be a secondary contact water. You really can't get in the water. You're not going to gulp anything up.
And that was a lot of the comments that, you know, you got this deep. How are you going to do full body immersion? And lots of people argue in both ways, you know.
Yeah, but you could sink your hand in the water if you're duck hunting, you know, whatever, so you could, you know, have hand to mouth. Face, whatever, so.
Mm-hmm. But Farmington Bay is 2A, isn't it?
Huh?
No, it's the park around.
Only Gilbert Bay is 2A, and that's because of the beaches.
Right.
It's the marina. It's mostly the marina I think we have samples from, but we had some really crazy high ones, and then on follow-up.
The marina out in Farmington Bay.
It's Davis County that was doing the sampling.
Well, when they were doing the samples, they were just doing them up the main channel in Farmington Bay. They didn't go very far because they didn't have anything to kid them out there.
Yeah, but now they do, and they did this study.
Yeah, they have a boat now.
I'll check on that.
They always have a boat. Okay. It just doesn't get far up. Yeah. Unless they've just gotten an airboat or a hovercraft.
Leland, I'll check on that and let you know.
Well, I'm just saying that's the example of where a 2A, but it does have massive amount of birds crapping in the water all over the place.
So we've been collecting enterococci data there, mostly because that tends to be more reliable in more saline environments. With the intent of just trying to figure out what's there, I don't think we're there yet.
And I should say the new recreational criteria document does address enterococci. I just didn't put it up because that's not what we use, and that's not what's in our criteria.
So I have
Chris, this is Tina. I'm sorry. Could you send that PowerPoint? I didn't see it attached. I don't know if you'll be able to send that over to me and to Dave to just take a look at.
My legal counsel has left. I don't know if I can get permission to share it with you. You know, it's how that goes, don't you, EPA? Yeah, I will post this. I will post this. I'm sorry. You don't have it at all.
That's fine. I'm just listening. I can't comment on this information anyway. I don't know enough
detail. They got a lot of comments on combined sewer overflows, is the studies they based it on, which were mainly treated effluent, going to be representative for when you get raw sewage? And EPA responded that raw sewage has a higher ratio of E. coli to pathogens than effluent does. Therefore, it's protective to base it on effluent. So when you get combined sewer overflows, the criteria would be overprotective. And if you think it's too overprotective, then you can do a site-specific standard, which just is not practical.
Well, we don't have any combined sewers, though.
No, but just this whole, it's everything is do a site-specific, and that's just not going to happen.
But we don't have this.
We don't have enough people to do an EPI study on Farmington Bay, for instance.
We have a new EPI person who joined the E. coli group, and she's got access to CDC labs to do, is it PCR?
Yeah.
And pathogens and viruses, and she's hooking up with the Davis County women to perhaps look at those beaches because she has extra sampling, you know, to see.
The beaches in Gilbert Bay.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah,
it is in Gilbert Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's around that side on Gilbert Bay. That's why we have Gilbert Bay 2A.
It's south end of Gilbert Bay, or it's on Antelope Island there.
Well, Rochelle can tell you all about
Ideal Beach at the south end.
Yeah.
because there's just a total skeptical attitude by our local health department, many of them executive directors, that are medical directors, whatever they're called, that there is any epi impact. I mean, they really don't think it's happening in Utah. So
here was the Aqua comment about the concern about diverting resources where they shouldn't be. Incorrect impairment decisions result in resources being devoted to chasing incorrect decisions in marginal waters. So EPA's response was, well, we didn't talk about monitoring and sampling strategy, but they want at least, they recommend at least weekly sampling. Yeah, and it's
all primary contact water.
Yeah, so that was a real helpful response to address that concern.
Just put your budget request in. I'm sure the legislature has plenty of money.
Especially when the health directors don't support it.
So EPA does, they did make some specific recommendations when you do multiple samples from a day. They recommend being treated as independent samples. I think we have a different approach in our assessment methods right now, because what happens is you get a high value and you go out there and resample a lot, right? You're trying to chase it. And so you end up with biasing these samples. But they want you to treat each one individually, even if it's several in one day. They promise future implementation guidance that is supposedly going to be out soon that will include specific guidance on qPCMR, which can get more at the specific pathogens and not just indicator.
And also, it's, I mean, for people who do a lot of beach closure listings, they need to have a method.
That's quick. Yeah, that's obvious advantage of the PCMR.
Do we have any beach closures?
Only in
three years ago for Salem Pond.
And advisory is not closures.
Oh, that's right. We have no, protocol for.
But Salem Pond.
For closure. The Department of Health talked about how they close restaurants and their criteria, and we never got past beach advisories to closures because
And Salem Pond, we never figured out.
No, and then it went away. And the guy who was sampling was a volunteer. I guess we did follow up with our sampling.
We did follow up.
So it's kind of questionable because he had an agenda about E. coli in the sediments. And
he so repeated the sample?
And it went away. Once the health department, we set them up with all their gear and their sampling, it went away.
When your volunteer is doing it, does he meet sampling holding times and everything else?
Oh, yeah. They're certified. They have to go through and be certified on all of the SOPs.
We go out and train them, and they have to go.
You train them, but there's no certification.
It's our certification.
It's our certification,
okay. Completion.
DOC.
Including our own staff, we do that now, too.
Yes.
Your own samplers oftentimes exceed the holding times on cold forms, unless they're doing them all in demand now.
We do them all in demand right now.
Because it used to be they exceed the holding times all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, we can incubate them in the van, process them. Actually, there's some really funny stories among the monitors about using the black lights to do the counts in hotel rooms and it being kind of creepy to.
Oh, yeah.
And we have regional now. Sandy Wingert runs this E. coli program in Grant, and she has set up all these regional health departments, BLM, whatnot, to be able to do the sampling and the analysis.
So they got a lot of concerns about non-human sources and the national criteria being overly protective in those situations. Jeff said that there's some evidence that it would be underprotective. But again, EPA's response was, well, you can do a site-specific standard. if it's non-union sources. So what's it gonna? How's it gonna affect us? Well, we need to decide if we're gonna stick with the 32 or stick with the 36 illnesses per thousand or 32. Should we change our max to 710 to match? And then we have this note in our table where we kind of say if it's a non-human source, then we're not going to worry about it. And so we will see what EPA says to us on our next triennial review. But I'm inclined to leave that sleeping dog lie.
I am still here.
Pardon me? What did she say?
I said I am still here. I'll make a note of that, too. I don't know if that's
easy. Oh, no. That's, see, now you know why you didn't get a copy of the presentation.
Again, this goes back to what it was, the difference. But as I recall, Bill was saying that the 36 is just as protective. It's just the way they do the statistical analysis.
It is.
Yeah. So
it is. And EPA said they both are equally
so
protective.
So would there be any reason we would want to try and change it?
Not in my mind.
Not in my mind either.
But no. It's... I wanted
you got to, it there, the numbers match. Why would we want to do something?
Our max is actually more protective than their 90th percentile.
Right.
It is, other than our max says it can be exceeded 10% of the time.
Well, so does theirs.
Yeah, so it's the only difference is 709 to 710.
That's just
but we're saying from 709, really? Which is our max, and they're saying from 710 as their 90th percentile, which could be a lot different.
No, it'd be the same, because we're saying our max, though, can be exceeded 10% of the time. There's a different place that says that all our standards criteria can be exceeded 10% of the time.
Except for a discharge. If you had a discharge from your stormwater or wastewater, then the max is max. Can't exceed it 10% of the time.
Because you couldn't get 10%. Yeah.
Major violation of the exceeded period.
So that may be something we would want to consider changing to be just...
No, that's fine.
We have a statement early in the... Right, it's like an almost introductory remark saying that for assessment purposes, for non-toxics, will allow them, you know, standards to be exceeded 10% of the time. So our maximum would fall under that, right? That same stipulation.
It does.
For assessment purposes, and we're pretty clear that, you know, in that context.
All right. So, yeah, that's...
Oh, that's a pretty good tour.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, I think we've hit anything unless
museum.
Somebody else has any.
Is it a museum?
Yeah.
Looks like it's probably a wastewater facility for demonstration purposes.
It is. That's a toilet on the big and tall man store.
But now you have to send it for Tina for sure so she can see the picture.
The 4-inch drain line.
Are you taking a really good picture?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you'll determine.
Sorry, Tina. My bad, not sending it to you.
No,
but
I just wanted to be educated since I haven't read their accused documents. So thanks for letting me listen to this portion of the discussion.
Yeah, it's nothing real exciting in it. But in the previous one, they were going with the 75th percentile as the statistical threshold value. So they did back off there. But like I said, the comments are all, they're posted on the website because they're kind of hard to find. And then the links to the criteria documents are on the website, on our website.
Yeah, I'd say for now
we're fine.
We're close enough. Looks like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris, for that analysis. Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, that's all we had. So, that's it till we see you in March. Thanks for coming.
Or January at the board meeting.
Okay.
Hey, Tina, did you get my note about Thursday?
Yeah. And I